where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2 trying to increase the power.
Welcome back, friends, and thank you for taking the time to join us on another episode of The Diary of an Arcade Employee. I'm your host, Vic Sage, and for this show, we're going to be discussing a classic arcade game that we do not currently have at the Arcadia Retrocade. This is a fan-requested episode, and I'll be talking about Capcom's 1987 unique platformer, Bionic Commando. Bionic Commando is a game I first encountered thanks to its 1988 Nintendo Entertainment System port. Although, to be fair, it's kind of a whole new game. Although, having said that, in the 90s, there was an arcade that I've mentioned before on the show called Monkey Shines that opened up next to the local Cobb Theater. That is where I first played the arcade version. Being familiar with the NES game, I can tell you that I had kind of a steep learning curve while plunking my tokens into it. When originally released in Japan in 1987, Bionic Commando was known as Top Secret and was designed by Tokuru Fujiwara. Tokuru began his gaming career at Konami before jumping ship and setting up shop at Capcom. Fujiwara had a hand in some classic arcade titles and even some home console ports. Just a few of them include 1982's Puyan, which was apparently as game designer, although he was originally uncredited for that work. 1983's Rock and Rope, 1985's Commando, 1986's Ghosts and Goblins, and then in 1988, he was the designer for Ghouls and Ghosts, and was listed as planning advisor for 1989's Strider. That's a pretty impressive list of classic Konami and Capcom arcade titles, to say the least. But when he was transferred to Capcom's home division, things get even more impressive. Working on games such as the Mega Man series, beginning, I believe, with Mega Man 2. He was also the director for the horror-themed Sweet Home, before going on to Gargoyle's Quest 2 and Breath of Fire, and he helped to create Resident Evil. The catchy music used in Bionic Commando is courtesy of Harumi Fujita. He too has had his fair share of working on classic titles, such as Ghosts and Goblins, Tiger Road, Willow, that one was for the Nintendo Entertainment System, 1989's Final Fight, and even Todd McFarlane's Spawn the video game, and Abobo's Big Adventure. I'm pretty sure I've covered this in a previous episode, but the business that would eventually become Capcom was founded in 1979 as the IRM Corporation. Capcom Company Limited was originally founded in 1983. The name is a clipped compound of Capsule Computers, which apparently is how the company was describing what separated their arcade games from the growing field of home computers. By the way, the first coin-operated game Capcom released was 1983's Little League, but the first arcade game they released was in May of 1984, and that was Vulcus. As I just mentioned, when released in Japan, Bionic Commando was known as Top Secret. It was when it hit the States that it received not only the name change, but a connection to another Capcom game, 1985's Commando. Now, in that particular game, the soldier was never given a name. Capcom saw it as a way to help sell their brand new game by retroactively tying it into the previous title. For what it's worth, thanks to home console offerings and sequels and remakes, we now know that the full name of the Bionic Commando in the 1987 version is Joseph Super Joe Gibson. Bionic Commando tasks 1 to 2 players, taking alternate turns, in filling the combat boots of Super Joe, as he must infiltrate through enemy lines in an attempt to thwart the launch of a nuclear doomsday missile, doing so by way of an 8-way joystick, allowing freedom of movement up and down, left and right, as well as diagonally in those directions. Pulling down on the joystick will allow Super Joe to crouch, which is useful in avoiding the bullets fired at him from enemy soldiers, in addition to being able to take out the bad guys by pressing the fire button, in this case, shooting at their knees. Hey, these are not nice guys. Joe has to take what advantage he can get. At the beginning of the show, I mentioned that this was a unique platformer, and if you've played Bionic Commando for yourself, you know why. It's a platformer that has no jumping ability whatsoever. To travel about the various levels in a stage, the player relies on a grappling hook that can be shot out. Just pressing the Bionic Reach button will fling the grappling arm towards the direction Super Joe might be facing at the moment. Pressing the joystick upwards while connected to a tree branch or girder will let Super Joe pull himself up. Or, when pushed diagonally while pressing the Bionic button, allows the grappling arm to connect to higher vantage points, allowing players to swing across the gaps in the level to reach the other side safely, or even avoid deadly traps littered on the ground. This is done by pressing the Bionic Reach button after you've connected with your intended target. You'll zoom up it like a zip wire, although, while it's true, you can hang under what you've connected with your grappling arm when enemies are standing over you and it's not safe to climb up to the next level on the stage, that doesn't mean you're actually safe, as some of the bad guys have a tendency to leap down towards you, and if they make contact with Super Joe, the player will lose a life. You will also lose a life if you come into contact with the various deadly wildlife and traps, or if enemy fire hits Super Joe. Sadly, our hero has no armor or bulletproof vests. Also of import is that a player cannot use the fire button and Bionic Reach button at the same time. You have to press one or the other. After losing a life, one of your reserve Super Joes will come down, parachuted from on high. The cool thing is you can actually control where he's going to land at this point. You don't even have to worry about the bad guys currently on the stage until the player lands. Pressing the fire or bionic button will cause the parachute to disconnect, and the game is back on. The levels of a stage are designed vertically, so you're almost always attempting to ascend to yet another ledge or tree branch above you. In addition, the grappling arm can not only be used to knock back enemy soldiers if they're getting too close, but you can pick up items that might just be out of reach or too dangerous an area to attempt to get to, slinging that grappling hook towards it and drawing the prize or power-up back to you. The player can fall down to a lower level if need be, just by moving off a ledge where there's a gap, although of course there has to be something solid beneath him. Now then, I found a 2009 interview with Tokuro translated by the Glitterberry's game translations page. When asked why the creator went against the grain at the time of Bionic Commando's release of not including a jump button, since it's in the platformer genre, Tokuro responded, saying, quote, "If the players had been allowed to jump, they would have grown too dependent on it. You asked me why I didn't put in the ability to jump, but the game would have been ruined if I had. So I did my best without it." That belief of mine lives on in other titles, including the later Mickey Mouse games. I was pretty proud of it. End quote. I will naturally be sure to include a link to that interview on this podcast post on the Retroist, as it's an amazing look at the standout games in his career, and definitely worth your time to read. In Bionic Commando, quite frankly, the odds are stacked against the players. But at the very least, they can count on some help throughout the stages. At various points in the games, parachutes will descend from up above, and they take the form of either a weapon upgrade or bonus points. The weapons are easy to make out as they float down, moving across the screen as if guided by the wind. Sometimes, they are just not in a spot where the player can take the opportunity to grab them, though. In total, there are 3 upgrades to Super Joe's weapon. The gun you start the game with and keep when you lose a life allows 2 bullets to be fired at a time. The first upgrade looks a little like a gunmetal gray grenade launcher, and when a player picks this up, they fire up to 4 bullets at a time, and the shot themselves are a tad larger. The next upgrade resembles a turquoise-colored M16 and lets Super Joe shoot off a fiery bullet, which is super fast and can travel through obstacles as well as enemies, but you can only shoot 1 bullet at a time. Its speed, however, really doesn't make this an issue. The last upgrade is a red-hued cross between a gun and a rocket launcher, shooting out one large red bullet that, when it comes in contact with an enemy or obstacle, creates a powerful explosion. So, while it's great to take out numerous bad guys at once, the slower firing speed on this one is something to keep in mind. There is one more upgrade players can pick up, and that looks like a silver and blue sleeve. That is actually for your grappling arm. Picking one up increases the speed of how quick it extends and can be retracted. The bonus points are easily recognizable, as when they are coming down from the top of the screen, they are inside little wooden crates. Super Joe can sling his grappling arm to cause the wooden crate to fall and break open, revealing the bonus points hidden within. While the importance of these are only as bonus points, they can help to earn a player an extra Super Joe. The loaves of bread are worth a mere 100 points. Ditto for the canteen. The liquor bottle is worth 300, as is the lunch pail. The pack of cigarettes will get you 500 points. But the two big prizes are the medals. These flashing bonus points will garner you 5,000 points for the one that resembles the Distinguished Flying Cross, and 10,000 points for the one that looks like a Distinguished Service Cross. Depending on the setting of the arcade cabinet, I believe that every 20,000 points gets you an extra life. Now then, I think it's time to tackle the enemies you will face in Bionic Commando. And boy howdy, you've got an assortment of them to attempt to get Super Joe through. The most common type of enemy troops the player will have to face is the soldier. This foe is wearing a purple uniform and combat helmet, and appears to be using a weapon similar to the one Super Joe starts out with. If a soldier happens to be above you, they will aim down at the player and take pot shots or even leap at you from above. Thankfully, if they are below you, they won't be able to climb up to cost you a life. That isn't the case with the heavy soldier, who looks like a steroid abuser. These brutes will charge Super Joe on sight, and it takes multiple hits to wipe them out, unlike the soldier. And as I just pointed out, the heavy soldier can climb back up to the player after leaping down a level. So, while Super Joe is busy trying to clear a path up the stage, the player has to keep an eye out for heavy soldiers trying to climb up beneath them. The rocket soldiers act a little like the heavy soldier. These foes literally have a cachet of rockets strapped to their backs, running to and fro, and they are able to drop down to your level if you're not careful. If they come in contact with Super Joe, they will trigger a massive explosion, costing you a life. This happens as well if the player smacks them with a grapple arm or shoots them. So while it's great it only takes one shot to fell them, if they are too close, you'll get caught in the explosion too. The short soldiers appear to be dwarf-sized versions of the soldier. Their smaller size poses a great threat to the player because they are shooting at Super Joe's knees. This is a member of the enemy army where a jump button would really come in handy to avoid those shots. The short soldiers are also able to perform some pretty impressive mid-air somersaults, so they can close distances with a single jump. You can generally find these devious foes as part of the next enemy. The short soldiers are capable of firing at the player, but at least it only takes one hit to dispatch them. Next up is the mech pilot, a hulking brute of machinery with one single goal in mind, squashing the player. While they aren't capable of firing bullets at Super Joe, they do hop around the levels of the stage, costing you a life if they come in contact. It takes a couple of shots to destroy the mech itself. That is when the pilot, who is a short soldier, jumps out and starts to attack. Then we have the flamethrower soldier, sporting a, you guessed it, a flamethrower. If they are standing when releasing the jet of flame, it can easily be avoided by ducking. The problem is, the flamethrower soldier can also squat down like Super Joe and aim for his knees. The next bad guys are kind of like a boss, and they are the crate soldiers, whose main enjoyment in life is to hurl metal crates at the player. Worse, these crates will bounce and tumble across and down the ledges, making the game a lot more difficult when you have to keep an eye on the two crate soldiers on screen at the same time, which, fortunately, is only near the ending of Stage 2. It takes a couple of shots to take each one down. In terms of vehicles, the mechs aren't the only options available to the enemy forces. There are also the futuristic-looking helicopters. The big problem is, these foes have a tendency to keep out of the player's reach. Your grappling arm has no effect on them. They'll hover overhead, and the pilot will attempt to drop red-colored bombs on Super Joe's head. And sometimes they carry a soldier with them when they appear in the stage. The soldier will disembark from the helicopter and behave normally. After a couple of attacks, the helicopter will swoop in, getting low enough to be on the same level as the player. And this is Super Joe's only chance to shoot and destroy it. You might imagine that keeping this gnarly group of enemy soldiers in check requires strong leadership. That is why in Stage 3, you'll have to contend with two enemy captains at the end of the stage. These foes are dressed in white uniforms and will begin shooting at Super Joe as soon as they see him. It takes a handful of hits to wipe them out, but the problem is they have backup, like soldiers and mech pilots, etc. So you have plenty to keep you busy while trying to gun the captains down. In Stage 4, you will meet the commanders. These bearded higher-ups appear at the end of the stage, along with a single captain. The good news is, they don't have any tricks up their sleeves, beyond more of what the captain had. In this case, flamethrower soldiers and helicopters. Last but certainly not least is the general, which players will encounter at the end of Stage 5, after going through some incredible hardships that I'll touch on when discussing the stages themselves. You'll have to blast your way through a couple of captains who are protecting the enemy general. While it takes a few more hits to dispatch him, he's really not that difficult. It's getting to him that is the issue. By the way, when you kill the general, you are awarded 1 million points for your efforts, before the game begins again at Stage 1, although at a much harder difficulty setting. At the very least, you will get to read a message, congratulating you on a successful mission, reminding the player they can't rest on their laurels until true peace has been achieved. There are a few more enemies and traps, but I figured I would wait to talk about them until discussing the 5 stages that make up Bionic Commando. Stage 1, aka the enemy base entrance, takes place in a forest, where spike traps abound on the ground, although they can be avoided by swinging over them. In addition, there are beehives hanging down under some of the massive tree branches you traverse. If your grappling arm manages to strike one, it awakens the slumbering bees within. The bad news is you can't shoot them as they come after you, but you can use the grappling arm to attempt to chase them away. Also on Stage 1 is a golden-colored flying beast. It looks a little like a bat and a parrot combined. These creatures can scale up and down the trunks of the trees in the stage, as well as fly towards you. You can blast them out of the sky when they get near you, but sometimes the angle of their attack means you need to focus more on escape, or try to use your grappling arm to smack them away. An additional threat on Stage 1 is that you'll notice some of the tree branch limbs are a different color. That's because they will crack and fall off if you stand on them too long. And while they somehow regenerate, if you're not paying attention, you might fall through an open space below and lose a life. There are also electrified barriers, or gates, a player must be wary of. Thankfully, you can just shoot them a couple times to destroy them. Stage 2 is known as the Forefront, where you will have to be wary of cannons and turrets that have been set up in the walls and ledges of the stage. The cannons fire off cannonballs at various angles. Some are shot horizontally across the screen, with other cannons being aimed diagonally. The turrets are only able to swivel, then fire horizontally. While the cannons can't be taken out, it only takes one blast to remove a turret, at least from an upgraded weapon. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, when you reach the summit of the mountain fortress, you'll have to be ready to stand against those crate soldiers. Although, in all honesty, you only have to take out the one in the upper right of the stage, as he is the one blocking your path to Stage 3. In the third stage, which is identified as Infiltration, because you are going into the sewers of the enemy base, you will be faced with gremlins. Seriously, they look just like the critters in Joe Dante's 1984 film. Except, these foes have a tail. While these quick enemies leap around a bit, like the short soldiers, the danger from these guys is they will gnaw on the various metal pipes that make up the underground stage, causing some of them to fall. And you will lose a life if one of these broken pieces of pipe makes contact with Super Joe. Also in this level, some of the soldiers patrolling the stage might hurl red grenades at you. There are large gates scattered throughout the stage. They can't be opened until the player destroys the control panel in front of it, which at least is easy enough to do. You either just shoot it or hit it with your grappling arm. To make matters worse on this level, there are a trio of giant mechs. These obstacles are capable of slowly raising and lowering their arms and legs, forcing the player to run under a foot or swing over an arm. Coming in contact with either costs you a life. Stage 4 is known as the Control Tower. Super Joe is deep within the base, and you'll have to keep on your toes, ascending and descending platforms to take out the two sets of control panels now to open a locked gate. At the very least, you don't have to concern yourself with gremlins, flying beasts, or beehives. The player just has to worry about the vast legions of enemies in his way. Stage 5, the final stage, presents you with a message at the beginning. Not the name of the area you have entered, but a message that is pretty clear. Stop the missile, which you will have to use your grappling arm to actually scale up at one point. After taking out the first captain in the stage, you will see a rather disturbing countdown appear on the screen, one that warns you that you have 60 seconds to reach the very top of the missile, enter the control room, and destroy the power supply, which is rather easy to do if you've been able to pick up that rocket launcher-like gun. Then, of course, it's onwards to face the general. A couple things of note on that last stage. If you die during the climb after the countdown has started, and you have an extra man to continue, it won't stop the countdown. It keeps going. If you fail to take out that power source by the time the countdown reaches zero, you lose a life. Oh, and you also get to start at the beginning of stage 4. Tokuro was playing for keeps when he designed this last level, it seems. Kind of fitting considering how difficult we know 1985's Ghosts and Goblins is, right? As for high scores, a quick look on Twin Galaxies shows that Charlie D. Wenner holds the record on the arcade cabinet. This is the only listing, I might add, with a staggering 2,256,370 points, achieved on August 1st, 2010. As I've already mentioned, at the moment, we do not have Bionic Commando at the arcade. Well, that's not exactly true. You see, we do have it for the Commodore 64. Speaking of ports, the arcade version was released on Amiga, the Amstrad CPC, Atari ST, ZX Spectrum, and even had an MS-DOS version.
And now, these messages.
For everyone on Game Boy Color. Get into it.
Tiger puts arcade action in the palm of your hand. Games like Mega Man 2. Fight your way through 8 stages of play as you attempt to defeat the villainous Dr. Wily, his evil dragon, and his 6 deadly robots to win. Also available, Afterburner, Shinobi, Altered Beast, and Super Sprint. Tiger LCD Video Games.
Friends, as I've mentioned, Bionic Commando on the Nintendo Entertainment System was my first introduction to the game series. Curiously enough, when released in Japan, the game was known as Hitler's Resurrection, Top Secret, which I think you'll agree is a far more imposing title. In addition, the Japanese version certainly had the villains of the game being a neo-Nazi nation, with swastika symbols and, as you might imagine with its original name, the main bad guy was a resurrected Hitler. This obviously was changed when it was released internationally. The swastika symbols were replaced by that of an eagle, and Hitler was renamed Master D. Another big change for both versions is that Super Joe is not the hero of the game. He has in fact been captured after infiltrating the enemy base, and it's up to Lad Spencer to rescue the hero and get to the bottom of the Albatross Project. This new Bionic Commando, who through the years would be known as Nathan Rad Spencer, was featured in the Game Boy version, a port of the NES game. And then there was 2009's Bionic Commando Rearmed, and its sequel, Bionic Commando Rearmed 2, in 2011. He is a playable character in the Capcom and Marvel fighting games, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, as well as Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. That doesn't mean that Super Joe retired, however, as after Bionic Commando, he appeared in Mercs, which was released in 1990, although using his birth name of Joseph Gibson instead of Super Joe. The character was also featured in Bionic Commando Elite Forces for the Game Boy Color in 2000 as Commander Joe. He also does make appearances in the Bionic Commando Rearmed series. However, there is one other game, an arcade title by Capcom, where Super Joe makes an appearance, although that is a point of contention with Capcom itself. That is for the 1986 Mad Max-inspired The Speed Rumbler, which to me appears to have been released in September. I bring up that fact because it bears a striking resemblance to Konami's Top Gunner, aka Jackal. That game was released in June of 1986. Anyway, the Speed Rumbler finds Super Joe attempting to rescue his friends and family from the clutches of a group of terrorists known as Zapper, using an armored pursuit vehicle equipped with all manner of weapons. I said it was a point of contention with Capcom, as in the Capcom Classics Collections Volume 2, it states they are indeed the same character. Although, in the Capcom 30th Anniversary Character Encyclopedia, it mentions that, quote, it was likely fabricated by the localization team. It's hard to believe that the developers intended for all three games to star the same guy, as the Speed Rumbler is a sci-fi game that appears to take place several decades after Commando, end quote. Furthermore, the Bionic Commando site ignores the Speed Rumbler, pointing out that Super Joe was the hero of the 1987 arcade game. And friends, I think that about wraps up our episode for Bionic Commando. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to the show. The Diary of an Arcade Employee is available on iTunes and even Spotify. So, if you have a moment, why not subscribe and help us get the word out on the show by leaving a review and some comments? Helping the podcast reach new listeners is always appreciated. You can find out more about the Arcadia Retrocade by visiting Facebook. Or for daily posts, you can check out the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast Facebook page. I share all manner of vintage arcade and home console fun multiple times a day. If you have any feedback or comments about the podcast, you can always reach me on Facebook or throw me an email at vicsage@retroist.com. You can also find me posting videos of the arcade on my Instagram account, which is simply vicsage_. Naturally, I want to thank The Retroist, not for just hosting the show, but for providing a spot on the internet where you can visit throughout the week to find some of the best retro-related articles and podcasts. Now, have a token on me as you listen to a clip of the game we'll discuss in the next episode. This has been a Retroist production. Thank you for listening, and have a better one. Goodbye.
End of line.